Music has been a huge part of my life for longer than I can remember. When I was a baby in the territory of Hawaii, all the Navy dependents in our family were evacuated back to the mainland except my mother and me. 24 years old and scared for herself and her baby and the young sailor that she loved, Mom bought herself a pair of red shoes and rented a piano. That's so Mom. Music filled my months-old ears as my mother played and sang her way into faith that she would see her husband and her mother and her sister and nephew and niece again. We moved to Brooklyn, where my dad worked at the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Once again, Mom rented a piano, and then once a week, she took the subway to a studio across from Juilliard. And she had piano lessons from someone there that she at least implied had been a professor at Juilliard. She wasn't enrolled in the school, but she often kind of fudged that fact when she told the story. She practiced 3 hours a day, she told me. And she used to say how at 2 years old, I would sit next to her on the piano bench with my baby legs sticking out in front of me and listen attentively. During the biggest part of my childhood, when we lived on the farm in Northern California, one of the family activities that we loved the most was standing around the piano singing while Mom played. She would bring home sheet music by Patti Page and Rosemary Clooney and Bing Crosby, and we sang with such great pleasure and gusto. Mom also taught us Schubert's Ave Maria. We liked it. We sang it, you know. And she played a lot of classical music for her own pleasure, so we took that in too. She had a rousing number that was called Clayton's Grand March, which I can't even find on Google. And she would play it at full volume to get us kids and our cousins down to the breakfast table during the summertime. It was so rousing we would march around the house before breakfast, right out of bed. One of the things my sister Kate and I loved to do was take a pile of sheet music out into the front lawn, or the Treasury of Gilbert and Sullivan, which we discovered had really funny words, so we taught ourselves a lot of those songs, or the Treasury of American Folk Songs. And so we would sing and sing and sing all the songs that we knew, which was a lot of songs. I had no idea until much later in life that Kate had perfect pitch. I just knew she made up cool harmonies. Kate's and my entangled, impassioned life together, and she died of cancer in 1998, was woven in music. In our 20s, Kate played the guitar, and we were a featured duo at numerous hootenannies. We used to sing the song of the Temperance Union. We never eat fruitcake because it has rum, and one little bite puts a man on the bum. Oh, can you imagine a sorrier sight than a man eating fruitcake until he gets tight? My son was little then, and he went, Mom, a man eating fruitcake, what's that? Singing is still one of my favorite activities, and I have sung in choruses for decades. Every morning of my life, I wake with music in my head. I don't know where it comes from. Some song is in there every single morning. And what I learned in joyful harmony with my sister and my mother, both far better musicians than I, is one of the deepest sources of what compassion and love and hope and faith that I have. When music affects us, it is a deep, deep influence. Ever notice how much better worship services are because of music? And this is especially true in Unitarian Universalist churches where the spoken word can raise all sorts of defenses. You all know about the old joke about the Unitarian Universalists, how we're not very good hymn singers because we're always reading ahead to see if we agree with the words. Alan Schwarzman, whom you heard in our call to worship with his aphrodisiac call to bliss, is known by all of us pretty much as a music aficionado, although he sticks pretty carefully to classical. And here's what he has to say about his music feelings. Alan says, "I've been listening to or playing classical music since I've been 13, and it has saturated my soul. It is simply a part of my ground of being. There isn't a day, hardly an hour, when music doesn't manifest itself to me in one way or another. Here's an example. At the dentist's office, I plug into the earphones, dial to the classical section, and am oblivious to the picking and scraping and drilling. Without the music, I feel the discomfort and the pain." So with authorities like Alan and me touting music's influence the way we do, we might ask the question, is music a sort of primordial need? Is it a primordial appreciation or influence? And I don't know for sure the answer about that. What I do know is that music's part in human life is such that it has become the stuff of primal legend and archetype. The syllable om is the sacred and amazing sound in Buddhism and Hinduism and Jainism and the occasional UU service. In the Bhagavad Gita, ancient scripture, Lord Krishna says to Arjuna, "I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support, and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier, and the syllable om." Pretty primal. Om is said by some to be the root of all music. I'm going to have us just say one together. The syllable has gotten a bad press because of people on street corners going om, om. But in fact, it is an ancient and very sacred syllable. And if we close our eyes and just say it together once, we can feel the resonance that spreads out in our room. So let's just do that as a little reminder. We'll just do it once. It sounds wonderful from up here. The choir song, Music's Empire, really speaks to the primalness of music. It declares that the original world was musical chaos, one great cymbal and murmuring winds and fountains, no, jarring winds and murmuring fountains. And then along came Jubal, who brought harmony and diversity into the music of the world. Now, I looked up Jubal in the Hebrew scriptures, in the book of Genesis, and I found that he is, quoting from my Bible now, the father of all those who play the lyre and the pipe. He is an eighth generation descendant of Cain, which means that he is only nine generations away from the mythical father and mother of all humankind, Adam and Eve. That's a pretty primal story. So we see the awesomeness of music stretching from a couple of 21st century humans back into the mists of ancient antiquity. It is so clearly a force for joy, for inspiration, for love, for action, for comfort, for the whole gamut of human life. And sometimes it is said that music is the universal language. But wait. We need to refrain from easy generalization, especially based on our own experience and preference. Carrie Baston, our music director, has pointed out, these are her words now, when people say music is the universal language, it's usually white people from the West saying it, and they're referring to Western art music and Western pop music. Think, she asks us, of the Beijing Opera. if you just kind of get in your head those drums and the kind of nasal tone and the different tonalities. Few of us in this room, maybe some, but not too many, have the background to find in those tonalities the songs of our souls. Like a lot of culturally different things, it may even sound all the same to us. Besides cultural differences, which can be pretty much unbridgeable to, in any soul-to-soul way, especially for adults, there are just differences among people. Some people don't even particularly appreciate music, especially if their brain's musical avenues haven't been stimulated by the time they're 12. And we're not all enamored of the same music. Quite the contrary sometimes. Just think of it. You don't like all kinds of even Western music. Alan finds his grandchildren's music, and these are his words, a descent into hell, Dante's seventh level of the bottomless pit. Why don't you say what you think, Alan? It doesn't do for us to make glib generalizations about music, because there are deep human divides in what moves us musically as individuals and as cultures. And having said that, let me return to the inescapable fact that music is a foundational part of the human condition. Carey points out there has never been a people discovered within the field of anthropology or ethnomusicology that doesn't make music of some kind. That's the end of Carey's words. And like all art, maybe more than some forms of art, music can lift us and move us and solace us and stir us and inspire us. Music at its best, when we are open to it, pushes us toward greater love. At the end of the service, we're going to sing a hymn that has the lines, "We must sing no ordinary song. Peals from a noisy gong will never do." Remember 1 Corinthians 13 in the Christian scriptures? That famous chapter from Paul on love begins, "If I speak with the tongues of men and angels but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal." When we have love, we have harmonious souls and deeply felt music, whatever its type. In the song they just sang with the words by Robert Louis Stevenson, this shall be for music, two people are creating personal, homey, everyday beauties which become a song. And that sounds like love to me, whether the two are mates or relatives or loving friends. Our offertory song, when I get through here, is the familiar and so touching, "How Can I Keep From Singing?" What though the tempest loudly roars, I hear the truth, it liveth. What though the darkness round me close, songs in the night it giveth. No storm can shake my inmost calm, while to that rock I'm clinging. Since love prevails in heaven and earth, how can I keep from singing? Sam Day was a member of this congregation in the 60s and the 70s. One of his obituaries quoted him as making the Unitarians reading ahead in the hymnal joke. He was born into privilege, but he chose a life devoted to social action, expressing his love of justice for all people. He was passionate in his causes, and he was jailed many, many times for civil disobedience. At the end of one extended period of incarceration, he had a stroke that cost him his eyesight. Whenever he spoke to groups that sang, "How Can I Keep From Singing?" was offered. In prison cell and dungeon vile, our thoughts to them are winging. When friends by shame are undefiled, how can I keep from singing? We sang it in this room at his memorial service in 2001. We lifted up Sam Day's unswerving commitment to justice, often said to be a pure manifestation of love. We celebrated the nobility of the human spirit. Sam told me once that he appreciated that singing. I think it represented for him the love that people had for him, although he wouldn't have put it that way. Alan's love of music makes his life softer and warmer, and since he has some of the stereotypical attributes of the American New Jersey guy, that's a good thing. My love of music, bequeathed to me by the musicians I loved in my family, gives me a more open heart, which as an in-charge person, I need. Music lifts up our worship services to a place where words alone would never take us, closer to mystery, however we feel it. And that is a very good thing. I'm going to have us end by singing a little chant together for a while. It goes like this. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. Which I would submit is one definition of love. I used to sing it for an hour or more at a time as I drove I-5 between the Bay Area and Seattle. And as I settled into it, seemed like it was always in the middle of Oregon, I could feel the love that will not let us go. I could feel a love that included but transcended individual relationships. I could feel the love that gives us the courage to work for justice and keeps the human spirit winging. Let us open our hearts and sing it together, not worrying if we have it right or what others think or how others are doing. Let us just feel that we will never be forsaken. We will never be forgotten. I'm going to sit down and start singing it. We'll sing it together for a few times, and as that fades out, then the choir will come up and sing, How Can I Keep From Singing? Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget you. I will never forget you. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. Listen, listen, listen to my heart.
Listen, listen, listen to my heart song. I will never forget you. I will never forsake. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you.